It's only been a year, and I mean, a lot of time has been spent just trying to get the doors open on this facility, but I can tell you that. I mean, one of the things that I like to do, no matter where I'm traveling in the country, is to ask people over a cup of coffee, where's the front door for entrepreneurship in whatever the city is that I happen to be in. And the one thing that's interesting in Jacksonville is if I ask the question 10 times, I might get 7 different answers.
That was Vic Knoll, director of the Life Sciences Incubator at Mayo Clinic. Vic is our guest for episode 6 of Innovate Jax, the podcast where we hear the stories of the creators, innovators, and entrepreneurs who will help elevate Jacksonville as a leading southeastern city of innovation. I'm your host, Kate Warnock. Now, on to the interview. Hi, everyone. I'm so excited to have our next guest for Innovate Jax, Mr. Vic Knoll. Vic, welcome.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
We're really excited to have you here. I'm sitting in this gorgeous new building here on the Mayo Clinic Jacksonville campus, and you are going to tell us all about the new Life Sciences Incubator because you are its director.
Yeah, I can't wait to fill you in on the details.
All right. Yeah. All right. Well, you know, again, we like to start when we have a new guest on, Vic, is kind of hearing a little bit about their background. So I want to know, you know, you're relatively new to Florida, right? And having been in your position with Mayo Clinic Jacksonville for just over a year, tell us where you were before. Where did you grow up? And tell us about the early
where
part.
Where I grew up. Oh, that's a great question. Yeah. So I was actually raised in the central part of New York State. I left home when I was 17 and found my way to Buffalo, New York, where I went to school. So I like to tell people that I was raised in central New York, but I actually grew up in Buffalo. My wife is from Buffalo as well, so we raised our family there. I went to school there at the State University of New York in Buffalo. And I had intended to go to medical school. I was putting my way through school and ran out of money at the end of my bachelor's degree and had to find a job. And so I found my way into one of the research labs at Roswell Park Cancer Institute. And through that, I met some guys who were trying to commercialize a technology that they had developed at Roswell. And so that was my first taste of entrepreneurship was at Roswell Park. So we took this little company out of Roswell, and we grew it as best we could until we ran out of money there. But the technology was good enough that we sold it to Johnson & Johnson, and then we transferred it out. And so I moved into industry from there and spent many years working for life sciences companies.
So you're telling me with your very first business, you had an exit with J&J?
Yes, but unfortunately, you know, I was just a research guy, right? So I didn't know enough any kind of a significant equity stake.
I was going to say, not a cha-ching sort of moment, but what a home run, your very right. first company out of the gate.
So really, that was my first business experience, too, and it motivated me to go back to school to get an MBA, and then that helped me in my industry career because I started on the operations side of the business, learned it very quickly, got involved in business development and M&A work, and that served me very, very well. I stayed in industry managing business units in biotech for, maybe about 15, 20 years, and then I left and started a private little consulting firm because I had this entrepreneurial itch that needed to still be scratched. And so in that practice, what we did was we taught researchers how to bring new products and technologies to market. So I took 3 colleagues with me from industry and we formed this little boutique practice. Our office was on the medical campus in Buffalo, New York. And so our first client was the University of Buffalo, who didn't have a formal business development office at the time. And so what we were doing was really just helping them to assess intellectual property and picking out the things that could be commercialized. And then we were helping to create commercial paths for whatever those things were. So sometimes they ended up being licensing deals. Sometimes we plugged into our broader life sciences corporate network and made introductions that eventually turned into acquisitions. And sometimes we started companies. So through that experience, I was involved in about 6 different biotech startup companies.
Oh my goodness. So yeah. give me a time reference for all of that activity.
Yeah, so that activity, I left industry, in 2005. So the consulting work started in 2005 and we did this, it's technically still active, you know, because I still do get calls from folks who need advice. I don't really take deep dives anymore, but I mean, the bulk of that activity happened maybe over a 5 or 6 year period until 2010, 2011. One of my clients too actually became the Buffalo Niagara Medical Campus. BNMC was in the process of building out an innovation district around the medical campus there. Although at the time, they didn't call it an innovation district because that wasn't a buzz back then. But really what they were trying to do was to, they were sitting, the campus sits in the middle of two underserved neighborhoods. And what they were trying to do was to beautify the campus. The city was poor, couldn't afford the upkeep. And so the member institutions on the campus formed a 501c3 that devoted itself to cleaning up the neighborhood, trying to find economic development opportunities that they could use to engage the community in really lifting themselves up. And they really wanted to start to bring retail back to downtown Buffalo. So those are some of the broad objectives there. A little broader social mission than what most incubators would do. But one thing that Buffalo was blessed with at the time was a lot of abandoned real estate. And so what they did was the 501c3 purchased an abandoned windshield wiper manufacturing facility from the city. They leveraged a New York State Economic Development grant to renovate it, and then they opened it as an incubator, a 100,000 square foot incubator.
No pressure.
No pressure.
Right.
Yeah. And so the work that I did for them was really to kind of help them with strategic planning. They offered me an opportunity to come on board to start their business development office, which I did, and then ultimately responsibility for the incubator came along with that. And so the focus was, let's fill the building, and let's start to put some programming in place that could help to identify and then launch some new business opportunities.
Before we dive really deep into your experience, Vic, I want you to help our audience understand some of the jargon that's really specific to this field.
Sure.
So we hear accelerator, we hear incubator, even just the field of cell biology and life sciences.
Sure.
Can you kind of give us some definitions around that?
Sure. So we can start with incubator and accelerator first. I mean, incubators are designed really to help people to understand the business process and then to provide the resources that they need to actually start whatever it is that they're thinking about starting. So it could be developing a product, it could be starting a business. And so typically there's no time frame for how long companies can stay in an incubator as long as they're making progress. They generally have some kind of a social element to them. Accelerators are a little bit different in that they tend to be industry specific. They tend to be more regimented in the programming, much more focused. They typically involve some kind of an investment. So accelerators will typically make an investment in the building and then in the business, and then they will connect the company to an extended network of resources for the purpose of really taking them from wherever they are at a point in time to a point that has higher value at some point in the future. So typically most accelerators will be, it could be as short as a 2-week program, it could be 6 months. But there tends to always be a defined time frame for how long the companies would stay in the accelerator.
So if I'm brand new and I have this really great idea, I'm going to start in an incubator because I don't know how to put a business
exactly
around it. An incubator is going to help me create a company
right
around this concept, but an accelerator is going to help me maybe be more successful with that
right
idea.
So a good way to think about it is if you're just trying to design or to launch a business, you probably need to be in an incubator. Because that's really more of the focus. And then once you launch your company and you're ready to scale it, then you're probably better suited for an accelerator.
Okay. And the folks that are going to help invest in a company, how do you find the right people to come to your accelerator? Is investment ever involved in the incubation stage? If I don't have funds on my own,
sure,
to bring something, you
sure
know, to start a company?
So here's the difference. I mean, in an incubator, you typically find, well, you would always encourage people to use personal funds as much as possible and to use family and friends to at the very early stages to really prove your concept and to maybe build your prototype. But as you need bigger chunks of money to get to that business modeling and then launching the business model, your next step might be an angel investor, you know, someone who really is not in it to make money as much as they are to help you to move your idea forward. And typically they've got some kind of an interest in the specific product or the field that you're working in. When you're in acceleration phase, typically you're ready for like your first big investment, right? It's maybe an A round where you're really looking for enough money to find your next 10 customers or to mass produce your product or that type of thing.
Okay. So, and since Mayo Clinic is starting this incubator around the life sciences, tell us what would fall under that.
So really, we're doing it for a couple of different reasons. I mean, ultimately, what we want to do is build an ecosystem that is going to generate new products, new technologies, new companies for the benefit of the community. So the focus is going to be on helping Mayo innovators to bring those ideas and products and technologies to market. And at the same time, what we want to do is we want to be able to attract cool little life science and healthcare and biotech companies, no matter where they are, to come to Jacksonville and to co-locate with us on the campus in a way that's mutually beneficial. So Mayo is blessed with a lot of great technical assets, blessed with a lot of great thought leaders, but we don't have all of the assets that we need to make an ecosystem. And so in that regard, we really are interested in attracting others from outside to come and join us.
So Vic, I mean, if you're talking about your in-house entrepreneurs and innovators, you know, you might be helping to develop new drug therapies, new devices, new
Correct.
Treatment protocols, is, you know, so everything that we associate with healthcare delivery
right.
coming from Mayo, it could be any of those things.
Yeah, so we talk about it in very broad terms. So when we talk about we're doing anything that touches healthcare or life sciences. So when I say healthcare, actually, I mean, I'm thinking about anything that improves a patient's health or well-being. When we're in the life sciences space, we're talking about therapeutics, diagnostics, medical devices primarily, and then research tools probably fits into there too. Healthcare IT is huge. I mean, that's a big part of it too, not only for internal process, but for patient experience.
Okay, well, we're going to take an expansive view here of the of the incubator. We know here in Jacksonville, the Mayo Clinic Hospital has been here since 1986. It's hard to believe. It's 33 years now. What kind of impact do you think the incubator is going to have to supplement this
yeah.
amazing presence that the hospital has in our city?
Yeah. So my hope is that we're really going to accelerate the development of some of these new products and the creation of some new companies that are going to provide jobs to Jacksonville. So, you know, as much as possible, we want to focus on that. Mayo Clinic does have a technology transfer office. So to date, a lot of the innovations that have been born at Mayo have made their way through a tech transfer office and have proceeded down the licensing path. And it's not a bad model, but it's not the only model. And the one thing that I personally don't like about the licensing model is that very often the IP or the products get licensed out to companies that are not in Jacksonville or not in Florida. And so what I would like to do is work on bringing corporate partners to Florida to co-locate with us and to work with us together to develop these products here in town. And I'd also like to have a focus on starting new companies here. So that's something that to date Mayo has not had a big focus on, but something that I'm certainly passionate about. And so to that end, it's very important for me to be a part of building an external ecosystem. So connecting to other incubators, connecting to universities, connecting to other business services, people in the community that have a passion for creating new companies and new jobs for the region, I think Mayo needs to play a bigger role in that.
So Vic, you know, you've been here a year roughly, and you had this phenomenal success. We were talking before we turned the microphones on about this experience that you had up in Buffalo with that incubator, and it expanded so dramatically and has such a massive impact on that city. So you have a really interesting and learned perspective on how to assess a city. How do we rate and where are we, you know, in all of these things that your goal is to, you know, help develop new businesses within our city,
right.
help retain our talent, help attract new talent.
Right.
Tell us how we are. How are we doing?
Yeah, so I think the jury's still out on that. I mean, it's only been a year, and I mean, a lot of time has been spent just trying to get the doors open on this facility. But I can tell you that, I mean, one of the things that I like to do, no matter where I'm traveling in the country, is to ask people over a cup of coffee, where's the front door for entrepreneurship in whatever the city is that I happen to be in? And the one thing that's interesting in Jacksonville is if I ask the question 10 times, I might get 7 different answers. And so what I've come to learn, though, is that there are a lot of assets in Jacksonville. I think one of the issues, though, is that the region is so diverse and, you know, spread out geographically that I don't see a front door, and I don't see where a lot of these folks can come together for collaboration or come together for the purpose of creating new businesses together. So, I mean, I think that's something that really needs to be worked on. And it's really interesting. Karen Bowling, who you might know, is the new director of the UNF incubator in downtown Jacksonville. And so Karen and I have spent a lot of time talking about this. And so we decided to try to get everyone together in the same room, similar to what you did recently. And we just put a call out and we said, we're going to do this event, and we called it Coalesce Jacks. I don't think that we identified Mayo or UNF Incubator when we did it, even though we hosted it downtown. And really what we wanted to do is just have a social networking event that would bring all these people together just to see what would happen, who would show up. And I could tell you, I mean, I was very pleasantly surprised that we drew 150 people to this networking event. And we didn't have an agenda for the event, but what we wanted people to do was to make themselves known to each other. And mm-hmm. So we just asked people if they would be willing to do just a 60-second pitch. So we said, if you are leading an entrepreneurial effort in some way in Jacksonville, would you stand up for 60 seconds and just tell people who you are, what you do, how you contribute to the entrepreneurial ecosystem? And I was surprised we had 15 people stand up and give a 60-second pitch. And what was even more interesting, after the pitches, just walking around the room, there were people who've been doing this work in Jacksonville for 10, 12, 15, 20 years, and many of them were meeting each other for the first time. So I think that was good validation for us that, you know, something needs to be done in town to start to bring these people together. And so if we can start to carve out a broader strategy for how do we build a very successful entrepreneurial ecosystem in Jacksonville, what would that take? And then once we've got that blueprint, we need to start to coalesce those assets.
So I think the biggest challenge is, and the reason why that front door may not exist just yet, not just because our geography and its diversity, but there's no real owner, right? You know, a designated owner. So, right. I mean, you have the UNF Entrepreneurial Center, but then you also have other universities who are interested in developing their own programs. So how is it that you find that right? You know, what's the tipping point, you know, that you attract, but then you create an organization that kind of then continues to manage and develop and focus its sights on creating a more robust ecosystem, like you said.
Yeah, I think that's a huge opportunity. I don't have the answer sitting here right now, but I can tell you that, you know, what I've seen in other cities, I mean, it really kind of starts with a place, right? I mean, so we call it the front door, call it whatever you want. It's a place where people can come together and start to work on that broader strategy together. So there has been a little bit of effort in the last few months. I've been invited to a couple of meetings with folks who are like-minded that are interested in working toward that. It's not in place yet, but I'm sure there's enough enthusiasm that it will happen. You know, I've seen that it works best when you're kind of in walkable areas. I think, again, I mean, back to geography, one of the challenges here is that, you know, you find tech people hanging out, you know, in one place, the beach has their own vibe, city does, you know, I mean, there's lots of different neighborhoods in Jacksonville, and you see elements of the things that need to come together to work, but they're really in pockets.
Right.
And so how do we create that nexus? And it's really interesting. I mean, some people have talked about the idea of doing it virtually, which I'm intrigued with. I don't know exactly how that works, but it might. But I think at the end of the day, it's all about density, mm-hmm. right? And it's all about alignment to purpose.
Right.
And so if we can, you know, if we can start to get people thinking that way, I think it would be great. So yeah, I mean, I've talked to the universities. I mean, student engagement, for example, is huge for us in our incubator, because as you can imagine, I mean, we'll see a lot of great opportunities to build new products and to start new companies here at Mayo. But the idea generators are not going to quit their day jobs.
Right.
So the challenge for me then becomes, how do I start to put business teams together that are gonna pick these projects up and run with them? And so the way that I've been able to do it successfully in the past is to find mentors and business coaches who are willing to project lead and then supplement those teams with MBA students, with engineering students, with marketing people, and then using an external network of business services providers who could fill in the gaps. And then those teams are the ones who actually are the ones to build the business models and get them ready for launch. Once you're to the point where you've got something that you know is investable, that's when the money comes to the table.
Sure.
And that's when the formal teams are hired and, you know, and the businesses can be successfully launched. But you've got that gap. How do you get it from idea to prototype and prototype to business model? And for Mayo, I mean, that's how we plan to engage the community, is start to invite people in to help us to run with those projects.
That was going to be my next question, is how is it that you're promoting, you know, who you are and what you're doing, and
right,
making sure that you're having that outreach and creating that awareness?
Right. So we're using our social media channels as much as we possibly can. You know, we're working on upgrading our website. Our first newsletter is going out today. And then a lot of it is just, it's hand-to-hand combat, right? I mean, it's just meetings like this. It's going to the networking events. It's making people aware of what we're doing, why we're doing it, how we're doing it. We're going to be hosting a series of networking events focused really at trying to participate in building that ecosystem. So we've piloted some coffee meetups on campus that have been very successful. We'll want to expand that. We'll want to add things like speaker series and hackathons and lunch and learns and happy hours and all of that. So those are things that will come. Some of those will be focused primarily on the Mayo audience, but I would say a lot of it will be inviting folks from the community to join us as well.
And I imagine with the thousands of employees that you do have here at Mayo Jacks, you know, just enlisting that
right,
tribe and,
right,
and creating that awareness, you have a lot of parents who would love to see
that's right,
kids in school have a real meaningful opportunity
that's
to
right,
engage.
So yeah, I mean, there are 6,500 people on the Jacksonville campus, so it's an impressive number. And, you know, if we can kind of turn on the creative power of 6,500 people and then engage the external community, you know, to help us to run with some of those projects, I think it could be huge. So we've already started with some of the recruiting for the college students specifically. So Mayo started a program, for example, with Georgia Tech University 3 years ago. We've got a common benefactor. And he has funded a program whereby Georgia Tech will send their senior engineering students to Mayo. Mayo Innovator or Mayo clinicians will pitch clinical problems to the students. The students will select one project that they want to work on for the semester. That becomes their capstone. So they go back and forth between Mayo and school maybe 3 or 4 times during the course of the semester, and then they come back and pitch their solution at the end. So I've been super impressed by the results of that program that I've seen. And what I would like to do is to expand it to include business students. So while the engineering students are solving the technical challenge, business students can be looking at the commercial opportunity. And then what I would want to do is to replicate that with some of the Florida-based schools too.
Right, right.
So we've already talked to UNF, we're talking to JAXU. You know, we're talking to Florida State. We've established a relationship with the University of Florida. They have a very successful incubation program at UF. Mark Long, who runs that program, is a good personal friend. So we've already talked about how do we connect UF a little bit more. UF Health is interested in an incubation type program here in Jacksonville. So it's really just a matter of looping all those assets together.
What a really, I mean, transformative opportunity though for this city, you know, who, you know, you hear of that brain drain sort of thing because folks don't think that there's opportunity locally, and here you are creating it, you
right,
know, that they can help define
right,
what that is right out of the box. It's
right,
so exciting.
So I probably don't know what I'm asking for, in terms of having a wave come at me. But yeah, I mean, we're very interested. We're interested in mentors,
yeah,
you know, people with industry experience, you know, who are willing to, you know, to pitch in on some of these projects. And certainly we want to engage students as quickly as possible. So, I mean, what I would love to have in the incubator is just a pool of talent that's sitting here just waiting for the next project to get activated.
Mm-hmm.
So our intention is to build that before the end of the year.
You know, we'll include it in our show notes, but what's the right way for people who are listening to this podcast who are like, sign me up, I'm ready to get in touch? How do they get in touch with you?
Sure. So you can start by going to the website. It's lifesciences.mayo.edu.
Okay.
So a lot of the basic information is there. And then they could always contact me by email directly. So it's my last name, NOLE.Victor@mayo.edu.
And we'll make sure that we have all that included in our notes,
yeah,
too.
That's but great.
All right, well, let's again, you're such an expert and you have such a wealth of experience in helping build businesses. So you have seen probably every scenario there is to see as an idea really comes to life. And I think one of the important things is, you know, the whole business model. You know, what I've heard of in my following the health industry and how innovation can happen, sometimes an idea is so bleeding edge that there's, you know, a lot of excitement around it, maybe because it's using the latest, greatest technology, but there's no clear payer for the solution that is being offered. So how do you help create the right business model when you see an idea, right? And maybe it has to go through a few versions of a business model. So maybe walk us through it. Do you have an experience where you saw a company really have to go through that evolution?
Yeah, well, if there's not a payer, there's not a business, right?
That's right.
Yeah, so I mean, one of the things that we emphasize, so a lot of times we'll follow just a lean startup methodology, right? So we'll want to fail fast. We'll want to be able to really define what the problem is, what we think the solution to the problem is, work on the differentiation. So we want to come out of that with just a very solid value proposition, and then we want to test that as quickly as possible. So a lot of the work that we'll do is to define kind of, you know, what markets are we trying to bring whatever that product is into.
Mm-hmm.
So there's two things that we want to know. We want to know who the users are going to be, and we want to know who's going to buy it, right? And it's not always the same person.
Especially in healthcare.
So that is a huge, huge learning for, you know, a lot of the entrepreneurs who are trying to do this for the first time. And then the other thing is that we like to tell people that you need to be building what the customer loves, not what you love. So that's always a tough conversation too, especially when you're talking to scientists who have maybe been spending years, you know, working on whatever it is that they're working on. But the point is that customer validation and product validation are huge pieces. So you want to make sure that the product works. It works well, and then you need to make sure that you do have people that are willing to buy it. And we encourage people to just make those lists. Who are the users? Who are the potential buyers? And let's get out there and start talking to them.
Right.
And we want to collect all that feedback, and we want to be able to make sure that we're doing a great pressure test on whatever that model is that we're building. And we have to be open-minded enough to know that more often than not, we're going to have to iterate on whatever the initial plan was. And the other important group of people to talk to in that are the investors. I mean, eventually you're going to have to pitch this to someone who's going to be providing your capital investment. And typically those people are very narrow in the kinds of things that they look for because they know what works and what doesn't work. So you have to also be pitching to them at the same time and collecting their feedback and integrating it.
So again, in looking at Jacksonville, as far as its maturity compared to some of the other markets that are kind of known and established innovation hubs, you know, do you feel like we have the right kind of expertise in our city, you know, from, you know, the folks that are you know, going to help with that, gathering that user feedback to the investors who are looking to put money in something? You know, we certainly have a lot of health science business in Jacksonville, but not necessarily a ton of innovation coming out of it,
right,
at least to my knowledge. You know, so how do you help inform the investing community as well as, you know, the in-house talent that you've got? How do you put the two together and really help drive that learning curve if one needs to be addressed?
Yeah. So I mean, personally, I like to take the approach of starting with market. So, you know, I want to understand kind of what market evolution looks like and what technology evolution looks like. And so, you know, to be doing those assessments and talking to experts that are doing that kind of work, whether they're in Jacksonville or not, to be able to say, okay, 10 years from now, 20 years from now, here's what healthcare is going to look like, or here's what therapeutics or whatever, and pick your space. Here's what it's going to look like, and here are the things that are really going to be able to make a difference. And then to be able to work back to the generators of the intellectual property to look for the alignments there, right? And so, I mean, a lot of people within academia are kind of resistant to the notion of directed research, but that's really what it is, right? Because you're really trying to create the vision of what the true differentiator in the market's going to be at some point in the future, and then pulling the technology through to make that happen. In life sciences and healthcare, a lot of times I think what happens is that the IP gets pushed from the research lab or from the clinic, right? So there's an invention or there's a, you know, a problem that's solved, and yeah, it might work for a small group of patients, you know, in a specific setting, but that doesn't mean that it's going to have huge commercial viability, right? So we want to be able to make those connections that we're working on the things that are not only going to have a positive clinical outcome, but that have some commercial viability as well. And we want to be able to pull those things through. Now, getting back to your question, as it relates to healthcare and life sciences specifically, one of the things that I love about Jacksonville is that there does seem to be a lot of great assets there. Not only Mayo, but you've got UF Health, you've got the other hospitals. I mean, you've got IP generating academic institutions. Again, the challenge is to kind of try to get those folks on the same page, you know, with a view of what does healthcare look like 20 years in the future? And then can we work together on some of those solutions for, you know, for the good of Jacksonville?
So Vic, you know, earlier in the conversation, we were talking about, you know, this amazing new incubator. We're in this fantastic new building, which is still kind of under construction, which makes it feel so new and shiny. For folks who are really interested, you already gave your contact information, but what about people who really want to know about how the incubator is going to work day to day? Why don't you explain for us what the process is and how Mayo is going to incubate brand new business in Jax?
Sure. So the incubator provides four things, basically. We provide facilities, we provide education, we provide access to business services, and we provide networking opportunities for people who are part of our incubator community. So in facilities, we're in a brand new building on the Mayo campus. It's called the Discovery and Innovation Building. We occupy the entire third floor. It's 25,000 square feet. We have a co-work space. We have private offices. We have wet labs for people who need them. We have something really cool that we call Idea Lab, which is where we focus on ideation. Like, how do we just work on solving a clinical problem or a healthcare problem and progress from that idea into a prototype and into a business model? And the education side, Mayo Clinic has an Office of Entrepreneurship that teaches a formal academic course in entrepreneurship. So the leader of that program is co-located with us in the incubator, and we supplement his formal education with things like seminars and lunch and learns that are typically hosted by subject matter experts that are in the community. So for example, if during the academic class we're talking about how to build a marketing strategy and people need a deeper dive, then we can arrange to have a seminar where we would bring in a local marketing expert to teach them how to do that with their real project in real time. And so that leads into connecting them to business services. So as you can imagine, all of the assets that you need to build a business model are not resident on the Mayo campus today. So we're actively building an external network of lawyers, accounting folks, marketers, IT people, regulatory folks that we can bring in and out of projects as we need them. So that's a service that we provide to the client companies. And then we're building that entrepreneurial ecosystem that I mentioned to you earlier as well. So, and we do that through events. Like, how do we create that tribe so that, you know, people are mingling with like-minded individuals who are maybe going through the same experience, or better yet, who have done that successfully in the past and can share their story. And it's just a support network, if nothing else, for those innovators that are attempting to go down that path for the first time.
So is this exclusive to people who work at Mayo Clinic as far as participating in the incubator, being privy to all of those amazing seminars where you're teaching these sorts of things? Is it open to the public, or, you know, how would people engage?
Right. That's a good question. So it's free for Mayo innovators. I mean, they can come at any time. For people that are external, there is some criteria around how they get access to the incubator. So first and foremost, they need to be doing work that's aligned with Mayo mission in some way. So they have to be working in healthcare or in life sciences, or working on a project that's in that space. And then ultimately, we will want to have them either have a business agreement with Mayo or be working toward a business agreement with Mayo, because we want it to be mutually beneficial. So those business agreements could be pretty general. It could be a collaborative research agreement. It could be that they want to do a clinical trial here at Mayo. It could be that they want to access a thought leader that works here at Mayo. It could be anything like that. They could have a small company that's looking for an equity stake, but they bring an asset that's interesting to Mayo. So there's a lot of different ways that we could get at that.
Fantastic.
And then the added benefit for folks that want to come to Jacksonville is that they should consider this incubator to be an open door to the entire Mayo enterprise. So even though we're sitting on a campus of 6,500, if you're in the incubator here, you have access to 70,000 Mayo employees across the enterprise.
And patients.
Yes.
That's remarkable. So, yes. Right. So let's you know, take a look ahead. Again, you're new still to the city. You've kind of taken our temperature, but you see this unbelievable opportunity here with the incubator and everything that this city affords, all the assets, as you mentioned. Where do you project Jacksonville can be in healthcare?
I think that, and again, I'm still learning, but I think that it could be formidable. I mean, I think the challenges that I mentioned earlier are not super easy to overcome, but they can be overcome. I mean, I think that there needs to be this coalescence of assets. There needs to be, you know, a focus on how can we become a hub for healthcare. So I've not heard people really talk about that a lot yet. But I mean, if we got to that point, I mean, I do like the assets. I mean, I think that there are great clinical assets in Jacksonville. There certainly are great IP generating assets here. In my view, it's success is, you know, where IP and talent and money come together. And so, you know, I see the IP. I think that there are some great latent talent in Jacksonville. So I say that because I've probably had 50 coffee meetings at least with people who are retired healthcare or life sciences professionals, and they want to stay involved and they just don't know how to do that. So we need to figure out how we draw them out. Mm-hmm. And then you've got this awesome group of students who are here, and we need to find a way to get them engaged so that Florida doesn't lose them.
Right.
So if we figure out how to do that, that's great. I think that'll start, and if we've got a few early successes, that'll start to draw some attention. And I think we've got some great natural assets. You know, I mean, people joke a lot, I think, about the weather and the beach, but I mean, those are great attractors, especially for people like me that come originally from the north, right? I mean, you've got a great cost of living, you've got low taxes, and you can see it already where in life sciences hubs like Boston and California, people are looking to leave those areas either because they're oversaturated or, you know, because the costs are so high. And so I think that we can be a great place for them to land.
So Vic, I know in talking to many of our other guests on Innovate Jax, kind of the secret sauce that they have identified is, in addition to the quality of life and the natural assets that we have, it's that spirit of collaboration.
Right.
So perhaps in a more mature market with saturation of entrepreneurs fighting for space and such, here they really, there's such a willingness to engage with
right.
new folks and welcome them to town. And hopefully that's the experience you had yourself.
I have. Yeah, it's been great. I've met so many great people and I've had so many good conversations that it seems like it's been a lot more than a year. But
yeah,
it's been a lot of fun so far.
All right. Well, Vic Knoll, thank you so much for sharing your time with us and bringing us up to speed on this fantastic new opportunity for all of Jacksonville to just evolve and grow along with Mayo Clinic and the Life Science Incubator.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's been a lot of fun, and I hope that all the listeners have an opportunity to come visit us.
Absolutely. That's great. Are you going to have open houses?
We probably will do something like that. So the building itself is having a grand opening at the end of August, and then shortly thereafter, we're working on some very specific events that will engage the Jacksonville community. So yes, we will be open to the public.
All right, everyone, stay tuned. So, all right, thanks again,
Thank
Vic.
You.
All right. Thanks for joining us for this episode of Innovate Jax. For show notes and a list of all our episodes, go to Furcura.com/InnovateJax. Know what Jacksonville changemaker who'd make a great podcast guest? We want to hear from you. Message us at InnovateJax@Furcura.com. Thanks for listening.